Ihi phalantya tan rasane na bhavan dana. We're going to go right into the word by words.
Dew
of heaven.
Patatya,
Pataya,
the masters,
Eva,
even,
Te,
your,
Nayayu,
cannot reach,
Antam,
the end,
Anantataya,
because of being unlimited.
Tvam,
you.
Api,
even.
Yat,
whom.
Antara,
within.
Anda,
of universes.
Nichaya,
multitudes.
Nanu,
indeed.
Sa,
along with.
Avaranta,
their outer shells.
Is
anyone feeling what this is saying? Anyone understanding something about what they're saying? This is the final prayer of the personified Vedas. This is their final prayer. This is their last words. This is what, of course, they want. This, in some senses, summarizes everything. So they're saying, Dvipataya, Dyu means heaven. Pataya, the masters of heaven. Eva, even, Te, your, Nayayu, cannot reach Anantam, the end. Even if the masters of heaven are glorifying you, they cannot reach the end. Anta means the end. Anantataya. Why? They can't reach the end of your glories because your glories anantaya. They are unlimited. That's such a wonderful concept to think about, and especially when we understand we're talking about this Supreme Person, Krishna, that his glories are unlimited. So what is the glory of Krishna? What does it mean, glories? The glory, we don't use those terms so often, the glories of a person. We tend to think more in the faults of a person, and we think this person's faults are unlimited. We tend in that direction, and we cannot find a trace of good in someone. That's a whole another point. But what does it mean when we speak of the glories of a person? It's not a common phrase. Item.
His glorious qualities.
His qualities. Okay, but what? Okay. His glory, but what does it mean? His qualities, favorable, good qualities, are unlimited. Now, what would you consider a good quality in a person?
Compassion.
Thank you. Would everyone agree on that? The compassion is a good quality. That would mean that Krishna's compassion is unlimited. Now, what would be another example of a quality? Now, that's very reassuring, isn't it? That his compassion is unlimited. What would be another example of a quality? Excuse me?
Humble.
His humility. Is that possible? That the one, a person who has unlimited good qualities would also include the good quality of being unlimitedly humble? Now that seems quite amazing, because usually that's exactly what we become proud of. If we have some good quality, we immediately think ourselves the most wonderful entity in existence. And we hope that everyone is going to recognize our wonderful quality. But Krishna has unlimited compassion, unlimited good qualities, and also unlimited humility. Point comes up in this, and we'll bring it up in a moment. Thank you. Another good quality.
Love.
Love. Yes. Unlimited love. For everyone. He loves every living entity, because Mama Eva Angsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, they're eternal. Everyone has an eternal relationship with him. And Aham Bija Bada Pita, he is the father of everyone in that sense. And he loves every living unlimitedly. He unlimitedly loves the unlimited living entities, and still he doesn't run out. Because unlimited means what? Bacha kaha. That one. Very nice. Good to see you. He has that quality to an unlimited degree, and he has unlimited qualities to an unlimited, and good qualities. Another good quality. Huh? That's, in one sense, that's the sum of all his qualities. He has so many good qualities that he's all attractive. And because he's all attractive, those who actually get a glimpse of his qualities cannot help but be attracted to him. And he's all attractive. So what does one's mind do naturally if one becomes attracted to the all-attractive? One can't take one's mind from him for a moment. And this is the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement. And this is the gift of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda. This is the gift that Prabhupada brought to the West. He wanted us to become attracted to the unlimitedly attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead, and become, for our minds to become attached to him, and for our consciousness to become absorbed in thinking about him. And this indeed is what Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita: Manmana bhava mad bhakto mad Madhyaji mam namaskurum. But first of all, manmana bhava madbhakto. You absorb your mind in thinking about me, which isn't difficult because he has unlimited sparkling qualities to absorb our mind in thinking about. We can think about Krishna's unlimited compassion, and Krishna's unlimited humility, and his unlimited wealth, and unlimited what else?
Renunciation.
And how many qualities does it delineate in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Nectar Devotion also? How many qualities does Krishna have that are 64 qualities? Now Krishna of course has unlimited qualities, but these are very, very specially mentioned. Does anyone know under what category in the Nectar Devotion Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu they are mentioned as? Okay, but what is the frame of reference in which the qualities of Krishna are mentioned as? Give you a hint.
Transcendental.
Yes.
As Udipan.
Yes, exactly, as Udipan. because it's mentioned in the frame of reference of a soul who is fixed in his relationship with Krishna. His stay bhav is fixed. And then the next ingredient in rasa or ecstatic love is called vibhav. And vibhav has two parts. Vishaya and ashraya is one part. And that means the object of love, which is the Vishaya, which is Krishna, and the Ashraya, or the shelter, or the possessor of that love. And then, what is it that makes that love arise within the Ashraya, within the person, the person who has that love? It's a stimulant. And that is what Udipan means. It stimulates one's relationship and ecstatic love and ecstatic feelings for Krishna, and the 64 qualities of Krishna are mentioned in that relationship. That if one becomes aware of Krishna's qualities, that stimulates one's love for him. And that, mixed with the other ingredients, turns into rasa or ecstatic emotions, or the relishing the taste of the soul's relationship with Krishna. He relishes that. Of course, this is a very high stage, but yet these qualities of Krishna are all attractive because he's all attractive, because he's unlimited. So even the point here is that the Upanishads, the Vedas, are saying that, Oh Lord, you have unlimited qualities, and each of those unlimited qualities are developed to an unlimited degree. So how can one ever stop glorifying you? If one decides to glorify you and devotes one's life and consciousness to glorifying Krishna, he's not going to ever be run out of something to say. Because Krishna's glories are ananta, because they are unlimited, and each of those qualities he possesses to an unlimited degree. What? Tell me another one of this. Does anyone know the four qualities that Krishna has that even Lord Narayan doesn't have? There are some qualities that Krishna has that we also have in common with him. And what is the percentage that's given? We think of this in a percentage. There are 50, right? Yes? 50 qualities that the living entity, the jivas have, that even Krishna has. We have them in a tiny amount. We can have some compassion, for example. We can't be unlimitedly compassionate. And Krishna has the quality that one may have to an unlimited degree. And we have it to a microscopic degree, a drop, and he's an ocean. So what is one good thing about that? When we see a quality in someone that is wonderful, in a person that we come in contact with, we can think, instead of getting envious of that person, we can think, oh, just how wonderful that quality is also when Krishna has it. And also that whoever has a good quality in this world, he has it because it's a gift from Krishna. It's a drop from the ocean of Krishna possessing that quality. But when we see someone who has a good quality in this world, an attractive quality, such as in wealth, fame, knowledge, renunciation, and strength, and beauty, we can think, and our minds become attracted. We can think how wonderful Krishna is, how wonderful he is. So the personified Vedas are saying this: Tvamapi yar antaranda nichaya nanu suvarana. That, even the Lord of heaven, even if the masters of heaven who are superior beings to us, even if they take up the task of glorifying you, they never end in their glorification, because your glories are in fact unending. Let's go on to the third line here. Ka. Just before, it was speaking about the not only the universes, but also the including the shells, the coverings over the universe. So ka means in the sky. Eva as Rajamsi, particles of dust. Vanti, blow about. Vayasa, saha, with the wheel of time. Yat, because. Shrutaya, the Vedas, the Shrutis, the Vedas. Twayi, in you. He, indeed. Phalanti, bear fruit. Atat, of that which is distinct from the absolute truth. Nirasanena, by elimination. So this atat, that which is distinct from the absolute truth. Nirasanena, by eliminating that which appears to be different from the absolute truth. We'll hear about the meaning of that in a moment. Bhavat, in you. Nidana, whose ultimate conclusion. Now here is the translation, please listen carefully. Because you are unlimited, and yet, amazingly enough, you have a form. You have a form, and we tend to think that form is a limiting quality, a limiting attribute. Because, as the example we give, we take a person who's sitting right here, he's not simultaneously sitting there or there or there or there or there or there. What to speak of sitting everywhere? If he was sitting everywhere, we could not perceive him sitting here specifically. Or if in the material world, we take a piece of paper and rip it up into hundreds of pieces and throw it throughout the room, so that paper is everywhere in the room and is no longer existing as that same piece of paper. So we naturally would think, with our material intelligence, that someone who is everywhere is not somewhere. But that is a material calculation imposed upon by the material mind and by the material intelligence upon the unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has unlimited qualities, and each of those qualities he possesses to an unlimited, limitless degree. So we cannot conceive of this person who has achintya shakti. What does achintya shakti mean? So unless we accept the principle of achintya shakti, of inconceivable potencies, we cannot, there is no meaning to the concept of God, of the Parameshwara. If he had conceivable potencies, he wouldn't be the Supreme. So he has unlimited, inconceivable potencies. And yet, he is a person who possesses unlimited compassion, unlimited humility, and unlimited beauty, and unlimited knowledge. And he speaks every language that there is, even the language of the birds and the cows. And what else about this unlimited person who's everywhere? Mama Tejo Angsa Sambhava. His potency is sustaining everything in existence. And there has been part of the prayers that they're offering is emphasized that he sustains everything. And it's important that we understand that he sustains everything, especially, and that he's unlimitedly powerful, and everything rests upon him. Everything in existence and non-existence rests upon him, because he is the Param Satyam, the absolute truth. And it's so important that we're hearing this now, because we've just heard the 10th canto. This is coming to the very end of the 10th canto. And we've heard about these activities of Krishna that are so human-like. He's herding cows, he's marrying princesses, he's killing the enemies of the Yadu dynasty, he's dancing at night in the moonlight. And unless we keep in mind that this person who is performing his Naralila, his pastimes, which so closely resemble in their own unique way, of course, but so closely resemble the activities of a human being, it is important that we also remember that he is not a human being like this. He's unlimited, and that all in existence is resting upon him. And we cannot take those two parts in one sense. We cannot take the part that he's unlimitedly powerful and take the part that he's performing an activity, he's with Balaram and approaching the forest known as Talavan, and he suggests that Balaram walk first. He wants Balaram to kill this demon, Dhunukasura. And Balaram takes him by the hind legs, this donkey ass-like ass demon, and throws him, whirls him around, and throws him into a tree. And when he kills Kamsa, Prabhupada describes it in the Krishna book as he kills him by the strokes of his fist. Kamsa lost his life. But the Acharyas also describe it in another way. The delicateness of what Krishna does, even in these type of activities. He grabs Kamsa, he jumps up onto the dais where Kamsa is. Kamsa has gone mad after Krishna has killed Chanura and Mastika and all the wrestlers, because he has no further line of defense and he's terrified of Krishna. Why? Why? It was prophesied that this Krishna was going to kill him. So his death was standing right in front of him. And that is the illusion cracker. If anything cracks our illusion in this world, is being confronted with death. We can be very brave and walk around and think we're so wonderful and we're strong. And then when we're in a fearsome situation, we're confronted with our death and we're confronted with fear. And our illusion that we're wonderful in the center of existence and we're well organized, it falls apart and terror enters the heart. And different people react to fear in a different way. Some people go towards it. Some people try to run. And other people try to work out a deal, an agreement. Kamsa, when confronted with the fear of his life, Krishna, he began to get nasty. Kill Vasudev. Kill Ugrasena. Take Nanda Maharaj and all the residents in Vrindavan who are there. Finish them. Throw them in jail. And Krishna became angry. And because he has unlimited qualities, when he gets angry, that's one of his qualities. He has the ability to get angry. And he has unlimited anger when he gets angry. So just that, and what do we call, or who do we call the Lord's unlimited anger? Lord Nrisimhadev. Now you can just imagine how angry, terrifying Lord Nrisimhadev is. Because he becomes so angry because his devotee, Prahlad, is threatened. And no one can stop his anger. So Krishna, becoming angry that Kamsa has threatened his beloved
his relatives and the Brijbasis. He jumps up on the dais so quickly. Kamsa pulled out his sword, and Krishna grabs him and throws him off the dais. And then, because he's very delicate, he doesn't want to land on the hard ground, he jumps and lands right on Kamsa. He's very, very careful about everything he does. And in between his jumping and landing, because everything is within him ultimately, he assumes the weight of the universe. And he lands on Kamsa with the late weight of the universe. Now just imagine what that does. Kamsa's dead. This Acharya Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura is explained in his commentary. Hi, Ball. So when Krishna acts, unless we look at his activities deeply, like one time I was in Bangladesh, and when Christian gentleman, young with perhaps a tinge of pride, said to me, "How could you worship a god who dances with the wives of others in the middle of the night?" Because unless one understands who Krishna is, what God is, philosophically understanding Krishna and the Rasa Leela as the Lord interplaying with his internal energy, that one will misunderstand, completely misunderstand his activities and think them mundane, because he kills the enemies of his family like Kamsa. He kills those who attack him in Vrindavan, such as... Yes, that's who I was thinking of. Bakasura and Putana. And he also kills... Who did he kill right after he killed Putana? Which was the next demon?
Sakatasura.
Who is Sakatasura? He was disguised as a cart. Now that's a peculiar thing to become disguised at, isn't it? But Sakatasura, he was formless. And he knew that Krishna had killed Putana. And he was sort of in the atmosphere thinking how to kill Krishna. And he saw Krishna underneath his cart. Why was Krishna underneath the cart? Because it's very hot and he was resting. His mother wanted to put him to rest even though it was a ceremonious day, and he wanted him to be protected from the heat, from just the joyous atmosphere, so he could rest. And Sakatasura saw Krishna. He wasn't called Sakatasura then. He was formless, like the air. And he entered, he had the ability to enter into anything, and he entered into that cart. And he assumed a heavy weight, and he was trying to kill Krishna. And Jiva Goswami describes that because he assumed a heavy weight, the cart went down. So he was thinking, "Oh, I will crush Krishna." And Krishna was thinking, "Well, I have little legs. So unless that cart demon comes closer to me, he's assumed this form he's got in there, it's going to be hard for me to... I don't want to expand my legs right now because I'm just a little boy." So the cart went sort of into the ground, and then Krishna just went... Poof! He flicked his leg like that. And suddenly this little boy flicked his leg. And no one could see it even. And suddenly, he killed the demon with his lotus foot. And everything, because on the cart were all these cooking utensils. not made out of plastic, by the way. They were made out of valuable metals. And they went scattering everywhere. And when metals go scattering, what do you think happens? There's so much noise. If we're not sure about this, next time we go into the kitchen, not the Didi kitchen, we should take all the cups and the plates and everything and scatter them. This is in your own house. And just see, hear the wonderful sound. I was about to say, I wasn't going to make that discrimination. Then I saw the temple president and his wife present. So I thought I should be very careful what I'm suggesting. Because then everyone said, well, Parijan Prabhu said. And it made such a sound that everyone became amazed. And the Krishna, they looked and saw, they were worried about him, and they saw that Krishna was safe. And they would think, oh, Lord Narayan has protected him. Again, first he protected him from Putana, now he's protecting him from the Shakatasura, the demon who was in the form of a cart. I don't know if they understood that it was a demon that Krishna was. So unless we understand the Achintya Shakti of Krishna and what Achintya Shakti actually means, unlimitedly inconceivable powers, and how delicately Krishna displays these in such wonderful ways as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, unlimited but yet a person with form, a person with form, but unlimited form, inconceivably unlimited form, and having a form. And we can take it from the logical point of view. If someone says that the Supreme Personality, the unlimited absolute truth, can't have a form, what we can very easily answer is, well, if he wants to, who is in a position to stop him from having a form? An inconceivable, unlimited form. Are you going to say, Krishna, you're not allowed to do this? And he might just like, look at this. You're not allowed to have a form that's inconceivably, unlimitedly powerful? That is not allowed to be one of your qualities? Does you having a form stop you from being unlimited and pervading everywhere and everything inside and outside every atom? Every atom? Every atom. Krishna is inside and outside of him. Very good. Yes? You should remember that. And so should everyone else when dealing with him. Krishna's inside and outside of me, Prabhu's. But ultimately, this one's an atom at Krishna's lotus feet. Because you are unlimited, this is the translation, neither the lords of heaven nor even you. Now here's where it starts getting really exciting. Even you, not only the lords of heaven, but even you yourself can never reach the end of your glories. This point comes out in Chaitanya Charitamrita. In Adi Lila. The countless universes, each enveloped in its shell, are compelled by the wheel of time to wander in you. Think of what this means. And he's a person in a form, and the countless universes, including their shells. And how many shells are around each universe? 7 layers of the different elements. And each one 10 times larger than the last, the gross and then the subtle.
All these are wandering, moving around within unlimited Krishna. What do you think about that, Uddhav? Yeah, I mean, he's big. And that doesn't even give a glimpse of the unendingness of his power. Because even if he was the creator of the universe, and we could think, wow, that's incredible. You just look up at the stars at night and Krishna's done that. That's incredible. But there's unlimited universes. And that doesn't mama angsa tejo, by just a part of my power I do this. What does he do with the rest of his power? It's unlimited. Unlimited power. Think of what that means. And yet, he's a person. And yet, not only is he a person, and obviously he's the king of everything because he has unlimited power, but also he wanders around Vrindavan without shoes on, like a village boy, an uncultured village boy holding a clump of yogurt and chipped rice in his hand, in his left hand, in his the wrong hand, a village boy. So therefore when Lord Brahma looks at him and sees this boy wandering around Vrindavan, he's a great devotee, the greatest devotee. And he thinks, how is it possible that this boy, decorated with the minerals of Braja, how is it possible that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Let's just see how powerful he is. And then when he gets a glimpse of Krishna's power, by stealing away the
calves,
not cows, because he was just. This was what chapter?
Chapter 14.
That's his prayers.
13.
He comes back a moment of his time. And he sees everything is as it was before he stole them, and the boys are there. And then he looked at them, and then he went to see, well, that means if they're here, where they were, they're not there where I put them. And he went there where he put them, and he saw indeed they were there. So if they're there, they can't be here. And then he went back to here from there. And his head began to spin. I mean, his forehead began to spin. And then Krishna said, didn't literally say it, but he said it with his actions. There's that saying, actions speak louder than words. So Krishna said, oh, you think that's wonderful? Look at this. And then he began to show that these boys, and not cows, but calves, all assume Vishnu forms. And then all the universes, everything Brahma saw there. And Brahma saw that these Vishnu forms were covered from toe to the top of their head with tulsi, and that every living entity was worshipping them. Not only the devotees, but ultimately every living entity was worshipping these lords, the Supreme Lord, because we either worship him directly or indirectly. It is unavoidable. That was one of the first questions I asked Prabhupada. Being a very intelligent young man, Prabhupada said that we have made that point that everyone worships Krishna indirectly or directly. So again, being, as I said, very intelligent, I said to Prabhupada, well, if we worship Krishna directly or indirectly, and it's unavoidable that we worship Krishna, then why bother worshiping him directly? Why go to all the trouble
sadhanas. Krishna. I don't think everyone's so impressed with what my question. I was trying to. I wasn't actually, of course, trying to avoid. I was just trying to show off. And Prabhupada said, yes. But if you worship him directly, you'll be happy. And if you worship him indirectly, you won't. Making the point that we have to serve either his Maya Shakti or his internal energy. So, and that's all he said. He wasn't so impressed with the depth of my question. He's so powerful that it's unavoidable that we worship Krishna. And if we can just accept this point, it's unavoidable that we serve Krishna. We see this all the time. People don't want to serve Krishna. It's not that they become masters and don't have to serve anyone. They just shift their service to Krishna that is meant for Krishna to something or another. The best of them. The best of them serve humanity or something like that and kill animals. The worst of them, they just serve the mode of ignorance. Serving their senses in the mode of ignorance, obeying their thirst, fully surrendered to their thirst or something, their senses. We have to serve. It's unavoidable. And one simply doesn't make us happy. But if we accept the senses, our senses and our whims as our master, the whim of our mind, they will beat us and beat us with the whips of their desires, forcing us to do things that are foolish, making a fool out of us. They will beat us and beat us and not give us the reward of happiness. They are relentless taskmasters and never satisfied. So Lord Brahma saw, he got a glimpse of the unlimited power of Krishna, and then all these Vishnu forms, who every entity were worshipping, were going in and out of Krishna's form, showing Brahma that this little boy was indeed not an ordinary little boy. He was unlimitedly powerful. And he being so intelligent, but his intelligence limited to one simple universe, knowing how to construct a universe. His intelligence was limited to knowing how to construct a rather small universe. He was astounded and flabbergasted, and ultimately he said many things. He described the beautiful form of Krishna standing before him, but it was unlimitedly powerful. And then he said that let others say they know something about you, but I will never say that. And he also said, if you reciprocate with everyone, I can't understand how you're going to reciprocate, because he had seen the Vrijbasis and their dealing with him. I can't understand how you're going to be able to reciprocate with them. And indeed, later on, Krishna says to the Vrijbasis, to Vrijagopis, now Paryeham, you've defeated me, I can't reciprocate with you. And actually, perhaps Srila Jiva Goswami says, at that point, I think it's Sri Jiva. He said, or perhaps Vishnath, at that point, after being defeated by the love of the gopis, he wanted to taste that love for himself. And therefore, he made the determination to advent himself as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
The countless universes, each enveloped in its shell, are compelled by the wheel of time to wander within you. What does compelled mean? Forced by time. It's Krishna's chakra and energy of the Paramatma, who is his part of Krishna. They are forced by the wheel of time to wander into you, like particles of dust blowing about in the sky, comparing a universe to a particle of dust, wandering around within Krishna, who is a person and who plays in the fields of Braja, and he plays his flute. The Shrutis, following their methods of eliminating everything separate from the Supreme, became successful by revealing you as their final conclusion. So tomorrow, we'll just repeat the verse, and then tomorrow we shall read the purport, which is very much mostly a quotation of the commentary of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura. But this is who we're dealing with when we chant Krishna's name. This is who we're dealing with when we walk into Krishna's temple and get an opportunity to offer him a leaf, a fruit, a flower, or some water. Someone who's unlimitedly powerful. And here I am offering $20 or some water or some rice to someone who's unlimitedly powerful, possessing unlimited qualities to an unlimited degree, and I'm making an offering to him. And more amazing than that is asnami paratatmana. If we offer it bhakti paritam, with devotion, asnami means I will take it, I will accept it. He who has no need, because nothing is external to him, the rice, the $20, the fruit, the flower, the water already is his. And yet he's accepting it. Because if we can offer it with devotion. So we should keep this in mind when we're thinking about Krishna, the deity, representative of Krishna. So this gives us something to think about. That's spiritual. One thing to think about. And we can do that forever and ever and ever. This is the point of the verse. Without running out of things that are wonderful to think about. About Krishna. So please repeat the translation and then we shall end. Because you are unlimited, neither the lords of heaven,
nor even you yourself,
can ever reach the end of your glories.
The countless universes,
each enveloped in its shell, are compelled by the wheel of time
to wander within you,
like particles of dust,
blowing about in the sky.
Krishna is forcing them to move around by his energy, his kala shakti. Kalosmin lokachaya krit.
The Shrutis,
following their method of eliminating everything separate from the Supreme, definition through negation, vyatirek, become successful by revealing you
as their final conclusion.
There's a very nice explanation of this verse. That Krishna willing, we shall read tomorrow. Any questions? Thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
Haribol. Oh, yes. We will respect our elders.
Why the residents of Mathura have been glorified so much? Residents of Mathura, that's the reason.
Why?
Why they have been so much glorified? That Krishna likes them so much, even they are not fully pure.
Oh, that was from yesterday's verse. Because living in Mathura is one of the Mathura Vrindavan Vas is one of the main one of the five items of bhakti that are most potent that Rupa Goswami has explained in Bhakti Samta Sindhu Nectar Devotion. Because living there itself, touching the land of Vrindavan itself, is itself devotional service. In and of itself, it is devotional service. So it is also not ordinary that one takes one's birth there. There are countless places to take birth, and the people with a particular type of piety take birth there. But we can also see that it's an opportunity, and whether one takes advantage of the opportunity or not is a different point. But it's such an opportunity because there, just by being there, you see Vishramghat, you see the place where Krishna rested after killing Kamsa, you see this temple. There are thousands and thousands of temples. And you walk around and the people in Mathura, there is one day in Kartik where they walk from Mathura and walk all the way around Vrindavan, like over almost 30 kilometers, and they're just walking and chanting all the time. There's such an opportunity to touch devotional service. So if one says that I've been born in Mathura, I don't have to do anything else, so in a sense that's okay. But if we develop love for Krishna, it's not some love for Krishna, we want to do something else. We want to do something for Krishna. We're so fortunate. In Mathura they say Jai Sri Krishna everywhere. It's fortunate. It is an item of devotional service to live there. But yet, like the items of devotional service, one can misuse them too, but still it is an item of devotional service. So one can ask the question, why does Krishna love why does Krishna love someone who has taken his birth there? But then you ask the question, well, why does someone take their birth there? Because they have this kind of this bhakti punya.
One thing that always baffled me about this Brahma Vimala and Alila is the difference in the time scale by which Brahma conducts his life in comparison to the earthly time scale. Brahma looks away for a moment and then comes back and it's a year later. And then later in the pastime, we see that Lord Brahma interacts with Krishna in terms of having offering prayers in earth time.
Yes.
That seems like painstakingly impractical if you're existing in such a slow motion realm as Lord Brahma is. You know, one moment becomes a year of earth time. How does he then interact with Krishna in earth time?
Well, I can't say exactly how he does it because I don't know what he knows and I don't have consciousness like he has. So it seems you're hinting at that it's sort of inconceivable. You said impractical, which is an interesting but it was obviously practical because he did it. But it is inconceivable for us. How do we conceive of even Lord Brahma, the creator of this universe, or the secondary creator of this universe? How do we conceive of what he does in creation of the universe? So the manipulation of time is just one element
and conceiving of something very subtle. So sometimes the bewildered parts of us, so those cloudy type of parts with us hide within, if we move the clouds a little bit, we find a doubt that, is this really true? Or is this a way of, what is this, a story, some mythology? So how to deal with that? That there are subtle realms and subtle ways of manipulating the material energy. We have to see if we actually, perhaps we can see if we actually accept that there is more to reality than we perceive with our two eyes. And if we start looking at it from that point of view, is there in fact more to reality than we perceive with our two eyes? And if we understand that there actually is, then we can ask the question, well, how much more? And that one we won't be able to answer so easily. And you see we could really go to interesting places on that, because there are so many different people who perceive different parts of reality that we don't perceive. So, and it would be interesting to perceive life from the point of view of a bug who, in India I've seen them, I don't know if they're in Australia, these bugs, there's like millions of them that come to life in one night, and then they procreate and they go around lights and they just fly and they're everywhere, and the next morning you perceive them quite clearly as dead. And there's thousands of them in Vrindavan. There's a few days when that happens. In Australia? Those fellows around? No, it doesn't seem like anyone's too aware of them. So what is their life like? What is it to be like a bug? Not that I'm recommending we take direct experiential routes to find out. But what does it feel like to a bug who lives his whole life of one day? Does he perceive that? Oh no, I only have a 6-hour lifespan. Or does he feel the fulfillment of his life with his particular consciousness, in that the birth and the death and the creation, everything, and does he feel the fulfillment of that life in that 6-hour, 7-hour lifespan, or 12 hours, whatever it is? So obviously it's hard to know exactly what it feels like from inside, being in a bug body, that kind of a bug body, but we can intuit that he's perceiving it quite differently, and his time reference is quite different. So there are ways that we can, through logic, inductive logic, there are ways that we can touch this question of how Brahma could perceive. How does he go back between the two different time realms? And is it possible? And does that really, that other one, anyway, it's interesting to think about. Did I address the question enough, or does that lead to more questions?
This seems, I can understand how it could be so slow that then interact.
But he can go, that he can go between the two realms, you're saying, basically.
Yeah, basically. That he's interacting from his realm, which is extremely slow.
But yeah, from the point of view of here, it's extremely slow. Yeah, so it seems like it would be difficult for me to do that, basically. That's the point. But whether it's, but how difficult it is for a person from a more subtle realm to do that is another thing. And it's interesting So many interesting things. He does have four heads also, by the way, if you want to get into interesting things. And not only that, there are Brahmas who have millions of heads. So there's lots of interesting things in the creation of Krishna, and they're all insignificant. And where I start to go with this one, personally, is that point on I perceive an element of reality, but I actually perceive a very small element of reality. And the nature of illusion is that I take the small part that I perceive and I consider that the totality of reality. That's illusion. You know that when in the 50s or the 60s, the Chinese started, it became to the attention of the West that they used to perform an operation without any anesthetic, but only through acupuncture. They'd operate on people using acupuncture. And the allopathic medical field just couldn't accept it. They couldn't believe it. They just simply couldn't accept it, that you can anesthetize a body in that way. And now, everyone accepts that you can do things like that. That there are meridians in the body that you can't see, and so many different things. Because the method, the scientific methodology of only accepting reality, what is perceivable, is essentially materialistic, grossly materialistic, and actually there is so much more to reality than what we could perceive with our blunt material senses and our faulty intelligence. That's the direction I take it to. And then I go further in different ways with it. But that's where I start. That there's more to life than meets the eye. There's more to reality than what I perceive. So if we can accept our own ignorance, and certainly no one can disprove the ability of Brahma to do that, so you deal with it in different ways. That's how I go about it. Last question, because it's already a little late.
What is the importance of trust and faith in any relationship? And if Krishna has made some relationship, how should we act in that relationship so that we don't misuse our position?
Okay, this is not a simple question, perhaps. Because first of all, there are many, many different parts, and I'm not sure I understood each part in exactly the same way that you meant it. So the first part was?
What is the importance of trust and faith in
any relationship? Okay. Well, we just take the converse of that. Do you think you can have an intimate relationship with someone who you have no trust of?
Not possible.
Huh?
No.
So there's the answer to that question, that trust is essential for any relationship. What to speak of a loving relationship? And to become trustworthy, which is a product of love, actually, allows one to go back to Golok. We only trust those. Oh, let's say we trust most deeply those who we have a loving relationship with. You agree? Yes. And everyone else we have to work out the relationship, and according to how much we have develop a relationship, loving relationship with them, we trust them. Like in the world, in our sort of business dealings, there's something that I call a business relationship. You know, you have when you work in the world, you meet people in work, or people that you're selling or buying things from, and you have relationship, friendship with them. But it's very limited unless it develops into something more than a business relationship. It's very limited how much you love them and trust them, even though when you're dealing with them it's one thing, but as soon as the dealing is finished and you move to another place, the relationship is broken, or you change your job and the relationship is generally broken. Business relationship. We don't want to have a business relationship with Krishna and the devotees. We want to go deeper than that. What was the second part of your question?
If Krishna has made various relations, then how should we act in that relation so that we don't misuse our position?
What is our position?
Everyone has a different position.
You're talking about in relationship to those people or relationship to Krishna?
Relationship to Krishna and particularly...
Okay, we start with the relationship to Krishna. He is our primal relationship because that relationship is eternal. And every other relationship is temporary. So how can we act in the temporary relationships so that our eternal relationship with Krishna isn't compromised? Well, that's an interesting question. I'm changing your question, rewording it a little bit. And within that question probably lies a lot of the answers to what you asked in your question. Because sometimes when people ask a general question, they're thinking of something very specific, actually, but they're asking it in a general way. And I don't know what the specific things you're thinking of when you're asking your general question. So I've answered your general question in a principle way, which is what the Bhagavatam class is really meant for. You talk about principles. So the principle is the most important relationship we have in as eternal souls is with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth. And then, based on that and His pleasure, we have to understand how to deal with everyone else. What would be pleasing to Him? Is that okay? Because as you said, He has created those relationships. So they're based on Him. Okay, we'll stop now. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srimad Prabhupada ki jai, Sisi Gaunatai, Sisi Radha Balava, Sisi Jagannath Baladev, Subhadra Devi ki jai. Sisi Gornitai, Sisi Radhabalava, Sisi Jagannath Baladev Bhakta, and Subhadra and Srila Prabhupada Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.